alcoholic. This is like an in-house, you know, homegrown. I know most people's faces here, so that's always nice. Yeah, I'm the backup for my wife, kind of the last minute, and glad to do it, because AA saved my life. So I've kind of dedicated my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, and as busy as I am today, and every minute is accounted for, I always make sure I have time for this, because this is what gave me all the rest. I'd be dead. I can tell you that much right now. I'd have been dead. Because, my sobriety date is May 5th, 1987. It's right around the corner. When I think about that day before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd been on a losing streak for a long time. Yeah. And I'd got to the point that I was a daily drinker. And I couldn't stop that anymore. At some period of my drinking, I could stop drinking on my own, but I just couldn't stay stopped. And at the end, I couldn't even get there. I'd wake up in the morning and want to drink. And those were one of my not yets, and I'd do it, you know, just to kind of get me going. And it's hard to have a good life while you're doing that. It doesn't coincide. Well, when I'm up here, I got to make sure that I don't exaggerate. Tell the truth, hard as that may be. So I'm reasonably sure I came out of my mother. Reasonably sure. I'll tell you my Easter joke since it's Easter. It's the only time I tell jokes because usually I don't. It's men in good taste, so if anybody gets insulted, I didn't mean to do that. It's just I don't tell jokes real well because I don't tell them a lot. But I did like this joke because I heard it. In Japan, they had a game show, and there were three contestants. And the question is, what happens in April in U.S.? And the first contestant came up, and the question was, what happens in April in U.S.? And he said, that's when sleigh goes in the sky, man dressed funny, has lots of presents, reindeer's name Rudolph, goes down chimney, deliver present, children happy, go back North Pole. Next contestant. Question is, what happens in April in U.S.? He said, put on mask, knock on door, get lots of candy, go home eat, get sick. Third contestant. What happens in U.S. in April? He said, man put on cross, died for sin, dies, comes back, see shadow, go back to the ground, six more days of winter. That's my one and only joke, and you get that as an Easter present. In fact, when I get up here, I'm not here to straighten anybody out, or that's not my job. I've tried that before, and it doesn't work. I believe in attraction rather than promotion, so if I get off of that, you'll just have to remember sometimes I still am spiritually sick. Two things that we need to admit from our program that can alienate people, and most of us go through this stage, is we need to admit rigidity and perfection, because most of us don't live up to it anyhow. And people are more able to digest this when we remove rigidity and perfection, because it makes it attainable for them. And that's real important to me today, you know, to keep that in mind. I'm pretty sure that I know what spiritual looks like today, and it looks very human, with some faults in it. I also believe spiritual is what spiritual does, and the most spiritual thing that I believe that I can do today is help another person save their life by taking them through the steps and introducing them to the fellowship that I got introduced to. I can't think of a better way. In fact, for a guy like me to become spiritual is probably a dead-end road, because if I read my book correctly, it claims that I'm already born that way. I can't become something I already am. It seems to me that our program is kind of headed towards me becoming useful to other people. And I need to remember that. For me, no longer is it about becoming spiritual or trying to obtain that. It's about becoming useful. And it seems to work really good for me. I said this the other night, and I think I caused a heart attack. Of course, maybe years ago, if I heard it, somebody might have caused a heart attack in me. And it sounds like blasphemy, and I hope it doesn't come across that way, but it's been many, many years since I've prayed for the knowledge of God's will. Because I grew out of that a long time ago, because I was immersed in outcomes and circumstances, and really behind that was, will this turn out the way that I want it to turn out? And I surrendered that one day. And for me, I came to live with something I've never really had a look back on, is that I am reasonably sure today that God's will is positive, and I'm reasonably sure that God's will for me is to be useful to another alcoholic and to society, and to leave this world a better place than what I found it. I haven't had to do anything else other than pray for the courage to carry that out or the strength to carry that out. So I haven't been on any intellectual trips for a long time in that realm. In fact, I've found that AA is not for people that intellectualize it. It's not for people who want it. It's not for people who need it. It's for people that do it. And then it works really good. You know, if I can just take me out of this equation through these 12 steps and God and the fellowship and good sponsorship, my life goes a lot better despite me, I can tell you that. In fact, I look back and the record of problems being solved in my life without me interfering is almost 100% when I look at it. There's not a blemish on the record. You know? And half the time I didn't even pay attention to them. They worried me a little bit, and then I got out of myself, just went on about it, and boom, it got taken care of. Because it's not logical. And spiritual and logical don't go together. It says early on that spiritual principles are the answer to all of my problems. And I believe that is because all of my problems are spiritual. It doesn't say the application of spiritual principles to the problems that bother me is the solution. It says spiritual principles are the solution. It took me a while to understand that. When I was 14 and a half years sober, I lost about everything I thought that I had earned up to that point, or almost lost, including my wife. We were in a separation. I lost a lot of money in a bad business deal because I built it a decision based on self that put me in that position. I got physically sick and put in the hospital. My company got sued for $2.5 million. And I could name four or five other things that happened all within a six-month period. And when I talked to my sponsor, he'd always say, how many meetings are you going to every week and how many people are you working with? What did that have to do with these problems that were so huge at that time? But I did it. And you know what? Every one of those things worked out. And all I did was keep my singleness of purpose intact. That's to stay sober and help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. If it gets any more complicated than that, I can't handle it. You know, I can't. I just can't. In fact, God has such a sense of humor that you know what they named that road? The sign on my road in front of my house is Self Road. It got named about 6 months after that disaster. Okay. I'd like to expel the myth too that we get rid of garbage here, and that these that there's garbage about this, or there's negativity about this, or that God's doing this, or some kind of stuff that really, in a good four-step inventory with someone that's pretty good with that, you can expel those myths or old ideas of the mind. There is a promise that we read in every meeting that expels that myth. Guarantee it. We read it, but we don't hear it. We can't hear it till we hear it, till somebody brings it to our attention. It says, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we can see how our becomes useful, can benefit other people. So nothing here is wasted because nothing's wasted in God's economy. And you hear all the time, I had to get rid of the garbage, or this was so painful, or this was, God was doing this to me. And it's like, whoa, wait a second. Think for a minute. Maybe that's an old idea. I was in a meeting in Southern Maryland yesterday, and they were talking about the devil. And this guy was bold enough to speak up. And he said, when are you all going to become accountable around here? And I thought, thank you for saying that. I don't have to say that now. See, I know today that any problem that I have in my life, I've made a decision based on self that put me in that position. I know that anything that happens that I perceive as good is because God, through the program and fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, has allowed that to happen in my life. Because I bumped into a God here of total goodness and absolutely no negativity whatsoever other than what my mind could dream up on old ideas. And if I can get to that point, then I don't have to be afraid anymore of that power in my life. I can embrace that power openly. As long as I have one negativity or one test to teach me or one trick to make me unhappy, it's going to be very hard to get close to a punishing negative God. And I'm glad that's not the one that you told me about, because that's the one I came here with. You de-intellectualized me and introduced me to a whole different perception than what I'd ever, ever, ever dreamed of. And it doesn't stop. So I'd like to start with, I am reasonably sure that I came out of my mother. I think that's a fact. Sometimes we have felt maybe we were just dropped off by a spaceship, but I'm pretty sure. Early childhood for me was built around the traditional idea of Santa Claus. I think early on I experienced happy, joyous, and free. I just didn't know it. Once a year. At about 10 days before, where you'd be, that sensation was so elusive that after a time you couldn't differentiate the truth from the false. I got a sensation off of Santa Claus that later it would turn into a drink, Wow. Just think of that anticipation of what you're going to get. And that anticipation would go right into that first drink. I had everything was loaded right there for me, right around Santa Claus. And as soon as you got the presents, got what you want, ripped them open, played with them a couple of days, they didn't interest you anymore. But Christmas was an absolutely wonderful time of the year. I was so self-obsessed. And I'll tell you what, when my mama told me there was no Santa Claus, you're talking about clinical depression, I'd have been raped if they'd had that back then. I might have even been bipolar, wondering which pole I was going to go to. God, that was a sad day. If I'd known better, I'd have gotten a drink. I was just too young. It went downhill from there, The only thing that saved my bacon was Halloween. because they threw the Easter Bunny out at the same time. Now, I wasn't self-centered, In fact, when I think of early childhood, there's only one thing I really did think about, and that was me and what I was going to get. So, as you know, Halloween turned into juvenile delinquency. That was fun. And then fun turned into being cool. And I put a lot of time and effort into that. And when you're cool, you got to walk a certain way. You got to talk a certain way. Don't say a lot of words now. Yeah. Because cool isn't talking a lot. Yeah. Got to get the right clothes, the right look. And at that time, there was some non-habit-forming marijuana floating around out of the 60s, of course. This was the early 70s, and being cool went with that. And one day, the Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill was introduced, and like I've said many times, they should have put a label on it. Warning. If you're 13 years old and you drink this whole bottle, you could be a future member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I drank that thing down and I belted it. And I want to tell you something. If you had lasted 13 years with untreated alcoholism, you'd have got drunk too. Can you imagine that? 13 years without a drink. And then I got one. Okay? And that effect turned into what the doctor's opinion calls a sensation. And wow. I can remember it like yesterday. Yeah. I remember who I was with. I remember exactly where I was at. I don't remember all the details like I used to when I was younger. But I know that tree was down there by the Chesapeake Bay, and I know that I got really, really drunk, and I went home and I got in trouble. And my alcoholism kind of followed that same thing. Is that I tried to keep that effect, but diminish the consequences from here on out. And the first solution that I came up with, and I didn't know I came up with it because I was just too young. I couldn't get it every day. It made me sick. Never wanted to touch it again. Was put space between it. And put something else in replacement of it. And I told you what I was replacing it with. And then I got drunk again. And it seemed to me, the best of my recollection, God knows how many times that happened, was that when I did drink, I drank for that sensation. To get good and drunk. Because I liked it. I just didn't like the consequences that went through it. And the consequences early on were hangovers, being physically sick. And then I ran into trouble. And so I went to the school psychologist. He's a good man. And he told me and my parents that I suffered from a lack of self-esteem. And they told me and told my parents that I suffered from a lack of self-confidence. And they told me and they told my parents that I had a poor self-image. And that if I could correct these things, then I could go ahead and do better in school, do better in life, and do better with personal relationships. Sometime after that, I dropped out, because dropout was cool. And my father was an Air Force lieutenant colonel, and he didn't think it was cool. And he sent me off and out of the state of Maryland over to Virginia into a program that was absolutely wonderful. And they told me that I had a self-esteem problem, that I lacked self-confidence, that I had a poor self-image. And if I could form better relationships with other people, it would solve my problems. And in a structured environment, it seemed to solve my problems. As soon as I left that program, I left with a GED. And I had first year of college under my belt. I had 2 drunk driving charges in 6 months because I built my solution on human power. And I didn't know I'd paced myself beyond human aid. That self-esteem and self-confidence and lack of poor self-image and positive personal relationships with other people don't do nothing to me at all other than get me drunk. Without you and the 12 steps and a power greater than myself and good active sponsorship, I don't stand a chance. I got misdiagnosed by well-meaning people that didn't understand what a spiritual illness looked like because there's no education on it. There's no master's or PhD. And a spiritual illness which I suffer from looks like many different things. In fact, it's confusing. That's why our literature says that only an alcoholic can affect another alcoholic as no anyone else can. Okay. And when I came to my first couple of meetings, I heard that. And I am so fortunate that I allowed an alcoholic with a solution to diagnose me with what my trouble was. It saved my life. And I was hopeless enough to listen and actually do it. But it would take me a few more years till I got to that point. Because I am one of those folks that have to be beaten into a state of reasonableness. Okay? Again and again and again. And again. And sometimes again. Went off to college. I should have got a major in drunk and a minor in unmanageability, but they didn't have the degree. So they gave me a BS instead. I'm here to tell you I'm unscarred by education. And when I left college, I was 3 credits short of a college degree. What my life looks like when I'm in full-blown alcoholism and a person that is convinced that self will run riot is the way to do it. I ended up in a house with no doors, no windows, no plumbing, no floor, owned by an ex-biker named Pirate. And he even had a patch over his eye. And he was kind enough to let me stay there. While my friends were graduating from the college, I'm living in there. All right? Now watch this alcoholic ego. So I'm there, and I'd already had all those drunk driving charges and more that I didn't tell you about. I decided, sleeping on that cold floor one night, it was dirt, I had a sleeping bag, that I'd go to Alcoholics Anonymous. They'd sent me there on the DUI charges. I didn't find you people in bad taste. I just didn't think I was there yet. I had some not yets to capture in my life, you know. I even thought maybe one day I'll sit among you. I just hadn't finished yet, because I still had some fun left. Okay? Well, in alcoholic fashion, I went to the meetings and got a sponsor, got a home group, stopped at the fifth step. See, I had a lurking notion or a reservation. It was a big one, am I really? So I stopped, and I went to a meeting every day almost for about 10 months. In that 10 months, let me tell you what happened. Windows came on the house, door got on the house, inside plumbing, plywood went down, bed went up, got job, got off the food stamps. And you know what I said? In alcoholic fashion. I'd outgrown you. I was looking for my graduation diploma. I went out, and I went to Warrenton, and they made me assistant manager of Wendy's. And I made the mistake when I went to Warrenton. I went to a meeting there. And I remember this guy coming in a month later, and he said, "Where have you been lately?" He said, "The way you sounded, we thought you were staying." That ought to give you a clue. And I didn't say anything to him. I just said, "I'm busy." Because I would have had a bulletproof excuse for him. You couldn't have argued. I got a full-time job. I'm trying to make a career. I'm trying to make something of myself. You don't understand. I don't need to do AA the way that you guys do it. I'm going to do it my way. You know where I'm going to end up? Back in my way. Again and again and again. So I'm in Georgetown, and I ordered a Heineken. And I guess I've been about 1 year short. Because I don't ever remember getting a year medallion. So somewhere in there. And I drank. And you know what happened. That sensation hit me. You know what happened when that sensation hit me? I remember it like yesterday, like my first drink. I said, "I'm going to get drunk. This feels great. I'm not going to be sober for a while." It was almost like I missed a dear friend. And I belted it down that night. And I got back to Warrenton. And a couple weeks later, I'm the type of guy, when I start drinking like that, you know what happens to me? I get unmotivated towards any interest in life, any motivation like work or becoming something, as society had told me I needed to be as to become complete. And my motivation happens to get in the direction of another drink. And when I really get in that state, I'm not a functional alcoholic, guys. You know what I did? I stole the bank and left Wendy's a note that night. I'm gone. I don't have a desire. And I went out and I got drunk. Real drunk. Drunk. And I remember for the first time that my drunkenness turned into oblivion drinking. It may have happened before that, but in Warrenton, I know for sure that I became an oblivion drinker. I may have been there before, but I had really become an oblivion drinker. I lived in a small apartment. It was like a 2x4. It was filthy. It had cockroaches on the ground. I slept on a mattress in a sheet. I didn't have a trash can. Trash was all over the room. It was filthy in there. I went down to Joe's Pizza to get a job. When I walked in, he was drinking at 10 a.m. in the morning out of a keg. And I felt like I was home. And Joe asked me if I wanted one, and I took one. I want to tell you, I laughed at Joe's Pizza for about 3 months and never learned how to make pizza. He was my type of guy. He was on a second drunk driving charge. He could have lied about it. But at least he said that. He said he had the flu and they misunderstood him that night. I understood, you know. When you're amongst liars, you're amongst liars. I mean, you feel right at home. And to make a long story short, you know, I tried a lot of avenues to really increase my effect of alcohol, mixing stuff together and all that. Did an awful lot of other things, and the most important thing that I can see of those other things in my drinking was they just really knocked me on the rocks a lot quicker. And they brought me here at 27 and a half years old. Without those other things, it may have taken another 10 years, I don't know. But I know that those other things pushed me on those rocks. You know. Like I said, I was trying to increase the effect while I tried to decrease the consequences, but unfortunately the consequences increased while the effect decreased. I got to the point where I wasn't getting much effect at all. My mind would dream up the effect, but when I put alcohol on me, it wouldn't match what my mind told me would happen. And I was in the grips of a progressive illness that always gets worse, never gets better, but I'm always trying to come up with a plan to get it better so it's not worse anymore, and it fails every time. And the insanity is when I get it back in me or I get close to it and anticipate that sensation, I don't see it. If I see it, I don't care. And the only thing that I found that plucked that out of my mind is the 12 Steps and Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, introducing me to a God that I don't have to understand. And a sponsor that I've needed the whole time since I've been here. I don't have an alcoholic mind today. I have recovered from that, but I have not recovered from self-obsession yet. It's still there. It's planning something new as we speak. But I don't have the alcoholic mind anymore, so the promise came true. It got removed. You know, doesn't mean that you don't think of a drink every once in a while, or wonder, God, I'll never get drunk again. Sure, all that kind of stuff goes through your mind. It's just part of being an alcoholic. But I'd like to say that I don't remember maybe a handful of times, maybe not, of where I've been tempted since I've done what you guys had asked me to do. The people that I bumped into, unfortunately for some people, but fortunately for me, didn't believe in relapse. They just didn't buy it. They thought that was being delinquent in the program of recovery. And they showed me in the 10-step promises where relapse was not part of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous unless I wish not to do it. And I'm glad that was pointed out to me, you know, because so often it seems like relapse is a part of this program, and it's not. But if you sit in enough meetings, you'll think that it is. It's part of the fellowship, but it's not part of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's part of the fellowship. See, the program has to be drunk proof, 100%. Has to be. Because I'm powerless over alcohol, that eliminates me having any choice of whether I drink or not. Has to be drunk proof inside AA. The only way I can get drunk is outside looking in, following my plan again. And that's my trouble. My trouble has always been my plan. Your plan, as outlined in our book and through good sponsorship, has never failed me. So I popped into AA on a losing streak to try to save a job. I stayed. That was May 5th, 1987. I haven't had a drink yet since. I got to tell you. I just got to tell you, wow. That's what I got to tell you. Wow. You know, just when you think you think you know what AA is, no, you don't. No, you don't. You're not even close because you're not capable. If you're like me, not capable. There are times in my sobriety that I thought, is that all there is? Just stay here long enough. You'll find that's not true. See, the result was Al until I let go absolutely. Again and again. I made up a new word. Againing. Doesn't even exist. Alcoholics have to suffer from againing. Again and again and again and again. And again. And again. And again. Oh boy. So I came in, I didn't waste any time. I took the steps off the wall and ended up with an off-the-wall program, but it worked. I didn't know anything about the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked into a fellowship that was heavily influenced by the treatment centers. That everybody was a double winner, triple winner. They had an aftercare plan. They had a disease that wanted to kill them. They were alcoholics and addicts, addicts and alcoholics, addicts. They were alumni. They were going back to treatment. The goal, it seemed to me at that time, for the mass majority of people sitting in meetings under 5 years was to be a treatment center counselor. And that's what I sat in. And there was no clarity or any clearness to AA at all. But it worked for me. In fact, you know, I look back now and I just kind of waddled through it. You know. And then these two guys were going around the United States and some over into Europe named Joe and Charlie. And that's what we had at that time. Today I believe they were a good beginning, but there's certainly not an end to this. There's a lot of sharp folks out there you can learn from. But at the time, I was very happy they were in my life, so somebody sent me to them in Contanding, Pennsylvania. And when we hit up there, a snowstorm hit. And I went to the card machine, and back then, you know, they had the plus card machines and then the other ones, and this card didn't have plus. And I had made amends to my parents for what I had done, and I called my dad and I told him that I didn't have money for a hotel. Could I use his credit card to get into this hotel? I wouldn't have a place to stay. And he said, sure, honey. I robbed that man from his credit cards and his money and his peace of mind, and I disrupted his wife and his home. And through Alcoholics Anonymous and the amends I was able to make, he told me, sure, honey, I'll put it on my credit card. Pretty powerful stuff, because before that my father wouldn't answer a phone call or ever give me any money because he couldn't trust me as far as he could throw a stick, and he reminded me of that every time he saw me. So I went down there that night, and Joe and Charlie couldn't get in because they were stranded in Pittsburgh because of the snowstorm, and they said there was a meeting down at this church, and we walked through the snow and we went to this church, and I opened up and there's about 30 people around this pretty big table room. And they all had these books that were highlighted in leather back covers. And the meeting started. I couldn't tell you what it was on, but I could tell you that I'd never heard that sitting in a meeting of AA that I had been going to. I'd never heard that clarity. I'd never heard there was a program outline for us. That's why they had written this book, spelling out clear-cut directions for us. But one alcoholic talking to another with a solution, something penetrated me, and the effect was electric. It has to be. And Bill said that his hot flash in Towns Hospital was sudden and profound. And I didn't have the white light experience, but I had a sudden and profound experience sitting among those people. I'd never heard nothing like it. Next day they got Joe and Charlie in. They said, we're going to condense it. We didn't have Friday night. And then we went into a fire hall. When I came out of that fire hall, I think I alienated everybody in 100 miles from my house. Just like old Bill said about Eddie, the old boy was on fire. We let him do that ranting. You know, I must have turned them off and turned them resentful. I had the book up in their face. I was like, no, the treatment center doesn't do this. I was throwing the book around. Hey, the directions are in here. We need to take the steps. And they'd see me coming and go, oh, my God, here comes that guy. You know? And you know what? I was so egocentric, I thought that I was bringing good news to them because nobody had ever told them. But what I found out, they didn't want my news. They were fine just the way they were. Really, what they wanted was me out of the meeting. Get rid of that guy. Jeez. You know, he's spouting all that stuff. Well, it did help out some people, but it alienated an awful lot of people. I had a guy come up to me in Southern Maryland, I think, last year, and I mean, I'm not kidding. He had tears coming out of his eyes. And he said, I hated you every time you sat in this meeting. And he said, after the meeting, I was so resentful towards you. I'd share it with them. I need to make amends. I said, you don't need to make amends to me. I probably deserve it. I said, the good thing is today you and I can sit together in a meeting and have a different experience. And that's what AA will do for you again and again and again. And, you know, we probably all go through that stage when you get kind of hit that gold and you get on fire and you're running around and then you find out, you know what, there's probably a different way to carry the message. But that's all I knew at the time and I needed to grow up some. And I did. And I found out for me, it's all those names they used to call me was a big book thumper and a big book Nazi and whatever it was, all that did was put the book between me and you, and it alienated me from getting to know you. And so one day I put the book down and I pushed it to the side so you could get to know me on a different level. And I'm telling some other people that are into that, do that now, they're about like me. They're threatened by it, and I remember being threatened. Being threatened is okay, there's some change in it. You know, it's not what you say, it's how you say it, and I had to learn that. You know, it's not what we say, it's how we say it to people. The steps are a life-changing experience once you take them. Okay? They will change your life in ways that you can't even think possible over a period of time. Over a period of time. There's no quick fixes here. Sometimes it feels like it, but really there isn't. There's life. And what I had to find out, in about just under 10 years, my first sponsor was a big book guy, he's a convention guy, and a lot on the knowledge of the steps and a lot about how to live. And the second sponsor I picked was a real structure guy. And the two had absolutely nothing in common. If I'd known what it was when I picked him, I wouldn't have picked him. I thought he was a big book guy like me. Just like Bob. I found out he wasn't. And what he helped me to do was to stop intellectualizing AA and start to personalize it. That to start to have manners where I didn't have manners before, to come to meetings early, not to disrupt people by talking during the meetings, to go to a minimum of meetings every week. See, the one thing I had the knowledge of the steps, the know-how of the steps, and I had experience of the steps, but I was still somewhat all over the place because I didn't have the structure to kind of hold me in there. And my life was good, you know. But I remember thinking, well, if I don't feel like going to that meeting tonight, I'm tired, so I didn't go. Well, I just got married. I need to spend time with my wife. And all sorts of things were going through my mind. This is all about steps. Once I get the knowledge of steps, I don't really need to fellowship. I mean, it was the train of mind that I was having. And over the next 10 years, through a series of resentments, when I picked this guy, what was I thinking? I mean, come on. You know, one time I told him about the knowledge of we agnostics. He says, I don't give a crap about that. I'm like, whoa, wait, you know. He said, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in how many guys did you reach out to today? I'm like, and every once in a while I tried to get approval about what I knew, and he just wouldn't let me do it. Because he didn't care about it at all. Really. And he said, I want you to make a minimum of 4 meetings a week. Because the national average on meetings is 2 or 3, and you're not an average guy. I thought, it's not in the book. Yeah. But I did it. And I had a very important lesson with my sponsor. I did it anyhow, depending on whether I disagreed with him or not. And I can't tell you how many times I disagreed with him. He doesn't even know how many times I disagreed with him, all right? I will assure you he would be dumbstruck if he walked in here and said, yeah, on the 500th time, I would just always say, okay. And he'd say, you know, I'd like you to come down to this convention. And I'd think, I'm pretty busy. I got a lot to do. Don't you know that? Okay. He'd say, how many guys are you sponsoring? I'd say, this many. He says, well, you ought to find 5 more. 5 more? Barely have time for this. Okay. And he taught me over a period of time that this wasn't based on how I felt. He'd say, you need to act better than what you feel. And that really saved my life. Because somewhere along the line, I'd gotten in my head that I needed to feel a certain way to do a certain thing. And that part of sobriety was me feeling differently so I could do it differently. And I found out that's not true. In fact, it doesn't matter today whether I feel like going to a meeting or not, I'll be there. It doesn't matter whether I feel like calling my sponsor on Monday morning, I'll do it. Doesn't matter if I feel like having a sponsor or not anymore, I'll still have one. It doesn't matter anymore about what this thing up here is doing. My emotions and my thought process are not in control of my life anymore like they used to be. And that's a tall tale sign of an untreated, self-centered guy like me, is that my emotions and my thinking are the thing that guides my life. And in our literature, it tells us, as we start to have this profound change, that attitudes, ideas, and emotions that once were the guiding force in our lives were cast aside and a whole new set were adopted. Okay? And it's not like I dreamed up adopting it. It just happened. Okay? We had a guy come to the group Tuesday night and explain the doctor's opinion on a level that I'd never heard. And they were talking about what moral psychology was. And moral psychology was me going to a therapist trying to rearrange the inside like I did at childhood to get the self-esteem, the new value system, the new outlook. And it says it fails on folks like us. It says, in fact, that you, if you're like me, an alcoholic of the type that the book spells out, we don't respond to the ordinary psychological approach. It says, in fact, what the solution is an entire psychic change, which is an intellectual's way of talking about a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. That's what it spells out. And at the end of the doctor's opinion, it says, outlined in this book. You know, almost on 2 occasions, it tells us exactly how to do this thing. And you know what? I did it. And I did it imperfectly. And I did it rather imperfectly. And sometimes I've done it very poorly. And sometimes I wonder if I've done it at all. And I look at where my life's at today, and I have to pinch myself. Because if in doing this thing's wrong the way I've been doing it, wow. You know? And my sponsor always told me, you know, Dick's always said to me, he says, you know, the one thing that you have to do here is you just have to remain active. You just have to remain active. There's a lot of distractions. that are important. Wife and kids and you just name it. Okay? They're all always out there, but the biggest distraction is me. That's the big distraction. And I have to make sure that I don't become my own primary purpose. I have to make sure of that today. That is my responsibility, that I do not become my primary purpose and start to call the shots again. I want to tell you about what's happening in my life. The house that I thought I was going to lose, I kept. We call that a monument to self. My wife that I thought that we had ended our marriage is better than it's ever been. The sickness has left my body. I'm in better health and physical shape than I've ever been in my life. My business was getting sued, and because of the process of the steps, the lawyers ended up liking both of us so much, and my partners, that they reduced that to $50,000, and could you take back the kid that we hurt in our care? And that's been unheard of. And we didn't even have to go to court. When I don't mess with it, it turns out fine. Every once in a while I have to get a little worrisome. But you know what I found out about fear? F-E-A-R? Forgetting everything's all right. Always. Society has traditional ways to do things, so we're in traditional thought. We think that's the right thing to do. But in God's world, it's totally different. It works out despite me. And it doesn't even seem like it can work out. But it does. The doctors told us that we'd never have kids. My wife's pregnant. You know? I'm pushing 50. You know, I got every minute accounted for. I'm starting another business. I already have one. Very alcoholic. Make 5 or 6 AA meetings a week, most time 5. How can I possibly get another one in? I will. Can't afford not to. Because I believe in the promises of the fellowship in the book, and they're in there, and they're powerful promises. They coincide with the steps, because I don't think you can do them without the steps. It's a fellowship with the steps is what I think it's talking about. It says here, our imaginations will be fired. We will find relief from care, boredom, and worry. And then talks about the positive outcomes in the future will always be positive. It's written in a different way. I just explained it in my way. In fact, there was a sentence the other day. Why the big book's coming out tonight? I've taken 7 people through the steps in the last 2 months, so it's very coherent in my mind. Okay, it says we don't have to look any further for utopia. So I asked the guys I'm taking the steps with, what are you looking for? And why are you looking for it? If this is you don't have to look any further for utopia, then what the heck are you looking for? I don't have to look any farther. It's here. It's among us. It's a we program. There's a power in here that gives me the energy to do the things I have. Every minute's accounted for. You know, my days are so busy, I wake up at 7 o'clock hitting the floor rolling. All right, I try to do 12 to 20 miles on a bicycle every day. I own 2 businesses now. Okay, I've got 70 kids in my care, 45 staff. I've got a wife that's pregnant. I got a mother that's sick, dying of alcoholism that I just spent the weekend with. You know, the book says we don't pronounce anybody as an alcoholic, so we don't, but we can sure tell them that their drinking bothers us. There's no reason that you can't. And I did that to my mother, and she stayed sober for the first time that I can remember in the last 20 years for 2 days in a row with me. And I went down there, and I got to tell you, God is so good to me. You know, everybody else are worried about these situations. Why don't you get a crisis center, and why don't you get an intervention, and you know, every once in a while you almost buy into that stuff because people are telling you about it, but you just keep thinking that's society stuff here. You know, God's good. Primary purpose, go to a lot of meetings. In fact, when I went down there, my sponsor said, how many meetings are you going to go to? I said, I go to 3. He said, that's good. Probably need 3 with her. I said, 3 in 2 days. You know, I'll go to a little bit more. He said, don't make any decisions until after the meetings. I'm really smart because the same decision I'm going to make before the meeting isn't the one that I make after the meeting. I get intuitive thought among you folks. And we take a kindly and tolerant view of people. Doesn't mean that we have to feel that way. We just need to act that way. So I took her on down to the retirement home and You know, I said, Mom, you don't have to worry about nothing here. I said, I'll move you. I'll find a way to move you. You know, you just relax. And she's almost crying in the car. She says, I'm so afraid. And I said, I know you are. I said, we'll take care of you. And, you know, in my mind is not to get my mother sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. She's 81 years old. What I found is, what my solution to that problem is, get my mother safe. You know, self-obsession would say she needs to get sober. She knows I've been in AA a long time to see the example. My job is to help my mother be put in a safe place where she's not in a, right now she's in an unsafe place. If I get to see the insanity of alcoholism in her house, it's filthy. It's a beautiful bayfront home overlooking the Chesapeake Bay in southern Maryland. It's where I grew up as a kid, and you walk in and it smells, and there's garbage all over the place. And there's boxes of bottles in the basement that are empty and in the cabinets that are empty. And she can't see any tie to the drinking. And I understand that. And I'm not there to straighten my mother out, though. You know, in my mind, every once in a while, it kind of peeks up and says, you know, hey, lady, why don't you wake up? You know what I'm there to do? To love my mother and be a son to her. That's what I'm there for. I mean, I'm not putting anybody down, but I didn't need Al-Anon. Because my mother's drinking is none of my business. Being a son to her is. I found everything that I've ever needed among you folks in the 12 steps. I have not looked anywhere else in almost 20 years. I hadn't even really taken a peek, except one time. I went to a therapist when all the treatment center stuff was going on. They're all working on relationships and all that kind of stuff. I went over to this therapist in Longwood. And his name was Dr. Stein. And I told him about my tale of woe. And he listened. And he asked me what I was doing in my life. I told him I was a member of AA. And it's almost like he sat up straight in the chair. And I want to make a long story short. What I ended up in that session, he says, you don't need me. Thank you, Dr. Stein. You saved my life. He says, you don't need me. He says, what I found with the patients that I've dealt with that are in AA, that AA was sufficient to take care of the problem that you're having. So I wouldn't waste your money. I was like, whoa. Now, at the time, I didn't know how profound that was till years later. Okay, I didn't know that. You know, that was a dime a dozen. So what? You know, maybe you had a lot of money. Nowadays, I know how profound that was. And like I said, I think for me, the saving grace was as I allowed another alcoholic with a solution to diagnose me. And over a period of time, and I think about 10 years in AA, taught me what alcoholism was and was not. And helped me to build my life on the idea of one problem, one solution, no multiple choice anymore. Common denominator is spiritual. And spiritual is what spiritual does. Spiritual is what spiritual does. It's actions. Sitting in a chair, I don't get too spiritual. Being among you, helping out other people, being useful, not having the objective of happy, joyous, and free. It's a letdown. It's a breather between the rounds of life. Okay? Whenever my emphasis becomes happy, joyous, or free, or serenity, you know what? I'm so self-obsessed, I can't handle it. I'm let down. It's not good enough. It doesn't last long enough. It should have been better. What comes up must go down. What goes down must go up. And that's not the objective here. In fact, that line really isn't even about that if you read what it says. What it really says is if you're in a bind in your life, don't blame God, because God didn't do it. That's really the outcome of that paragraph. And that's been really important to me, you know, that God didn't do it. That I'm not a hapless victim anymore. Okay? I'm not. I'm accountable today. And I don't have to like it, but I am. And when I became accountable here, through good sponsorship, hanging out in a strong home group. I'm telling you what, every problem that's come down the pike, mother or not, when I walk into it, I know it's going to be okay. Over a period of time. I got hope in every problem that you could throw at me. It doesn't matter. Because when the chips are down, there's only one thing that a guy like me can do, and I can do it almost 100%. I can show up to the meeting and listen. And I'm always a different person when I come out of the meeting as when I came in. And I can do that in times of hard times. I double up on the meetings, not the conversations about the problem. And a lot of people want to double up on the conversation about the drama. And it doesn't do anything. Because we're not a toxic waste dump. We're a solution. We're a solution. And one thing Dick said, he says, you know what you need to train your mind on? I said, what's that? He says, solution groups, not problem groups. Because you need a solution. You already got the problem. You need to be surrounded by the solution. You know what? We're fortunate enough today, and 10 years ago we weren't, is I can go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every night of the week based on singleness of purpose and solution. And I wasn't there 10 years ago. I'm fortunate enough. And I still pop into the SS group, something similar. Because there's folks that need to see me in there and I need to see them. You know, don't be afraid. We can go anywhere. I like to go to all meetings. When I go to town, you know what I go to? I come from a structured AA. You come early, you know. You dress appropriately. You clean up your language. All of that. I go to clubhouses all the time. And let me tell you about clubhouses. On any given day, they're better than Jerry Springer. You know? You just got to be there to see it. You know? Don't miss out here. Don't cheat yourself. When I go to D.C., I go to the Unity Club. Last time I was in the Unity Club, three people spoke up. Said the same thing. They said they hadn't been to a meeting anywhere from 4 to 10 years. And they all had something in common. They were all unhappy. And then they had this crazy person walking around the meeting like this. All meeting. And I thought, where else but Alcoholics Anonymous? Yeah? The stories that we hear here. Yeah? Over and over and over. I mean, my friend from Colorado says this is a landing zone for nutcases. Join the club. You know? But I'll tell you what. If you'll give up your defiance and your rightness, I got to be right, they're wrong. And your dishonesty as much as you can. And embrace the 12 steps. As outlined in the big book, and leave out rigidity and perfection, but do it. And you can do it poorly because you'll get a chance at it again and again and again. It took me 14 and a half years to write a personal inventory, not an intellectual inventory. I'm rather slow. Okay, but I kept doing it. Get a sponsor and use a sponsor. Go to a home group where they talk about a solution. You have peer pressure in there that's helping you to get active rather than your mind, if it's like mine, will dream up ways to be inactive here. In fact, I have a mind that's very dangerous with this length of time, and I'll tell you what it is. If I don't stay active, my mind tells me I've outgrown this. My life's good. Marriage is good. Possibly babies on the way if we're able to keep this one. We haven't had much luck. Business is good. Finances is good. Health's good. Why am I making such a big deal about it? Isn't this the life that AA is supposed to give us? I came here to get a life and get responsibilities. I got them now. The bad news is that's not why I came here. And what happened to me when I went through that growth period at 14 and a half years is AA for me stopped being a living program. And it started to become a giving program. It stopped becoming so much of being spiritual as it was to be useful. And if I'll do the things that AA asked me to do, whether I agree with it or not or feel like it, but do it anyhow, I'll tell you what will happen. Sitting in your chair right now, the way that you see the world, the way that you feel about things, the way that your relationships are, the way your finances are, your legal status, whatever it is, if you would wholeheartedly accept this program and do it, go to a lot of meetings, get a sponsor, and do everything we ask you to do in here, which are the basics. If we came back 1 year and you're sitting in that chair, I'd like to hear what you have to say. And I tell you what you have to say. It'll be totally different. And not only will it be totally different, it will be positive. Because the one thing my mind can't come up with on its own is positive, because it's full of negativity. Okay? That's why I need you folks. And I need the 12 steps. And I need a God that I don't understand. Now I'd like to leave you with this. Is that I believe today, beyond a shadow of doubt, and I don't always live up to it, that I am absolutely nothing without God in my life. I believe that. Don't always live up to it. Don't get me on a video. I also believe, without you folks, on a weekly basis, I tend to diminish and forget about God, little by little, and start to remember me and me and me and me more and more. And by being with you a lot of times each week, and in your good company, I think about God a lot more in my life, and me a lot less. And I think about you a lot more, and my problems a lot less. And I just can't think of a better way to live. You know, I couldn't have dreamed this up. That's why God needed to do that.